Okay, a couple things. First announcement is about the homework. I know a lot of you had a little bit of trouble with it, and for those of you that emailed me, I said, well, don't worry about it, because what we're going to cover today in class I think will help. So if you have it ready to turn in, just hold on to it, and I'll leave it up to you if you want to maybe change a few items on it. And let's say maybe have it due on Thursday. All right? But I think what we'll go over today will answer many of the questions that you had. I noticed several people were struggling with this over spring break, so I that's not a good sign. But I'm glad people are thinking about soils. So what we're going to do is today is finish up this unit on soil taxonomy. And what I'm going to do is talk about a couple of things, formative elements, and how all of this stuff fits together. Then we're going to talk a little bit about family classification, and should finish that up. And then on Thursday, what we're going to do for the rest of the semester is go through each of the soil orders. So we've kind of gotten to the point where you guys are not going to get any more new information, really. It's just going to be recycling of what we've had up to this point. And I think you're going to find that things might start to come together a little bit. You've got all these loose ideas rattling around in your brain. I think they'll start to coalesce a little bit more. So for the homework, don't worry about it until Thursday, but you can turn it in now if you want, or whenever, between now and then. Okay, so if you remember back when we started talking about soil taxonomy and how it's set up, we said that the classification at the higher levels of the system, like the orders and suborders and great groups and even to some extent subgroups, is based on the presence or absence of diagnostic horizons and features and soil moisture and temperature regimes. Okay, so like for this assignment, one thing that you should recognize is that you could have the most or the least developed soil in the world, and you're still going to have a moisture regime, a temperature regime, and what diagnostic horizon? What's that? I think somebody said it. Yeah, an ochric epipedon, because every soil has got an epipedon. And by default, you know, we said ochric would be the one that if you don't have any of the other features of other epipedons. So there's at least three things for every soil: moisture regime, temperature regime, and an ochric epipedon. Of course, many of them are going to have more diagnostic features. But what I want to cover here is something that I'm going to call formative elements. And all these are Greek, mostly Greek and Latin roots that are combined to produce the taxonomic classes in soil taxonomy. So, and you're going to think, oh no, Greek, Latin roots, but a lot of these, the vast majority of these, you have already seen in one form or another. For example, Argy is a formative element. What does that refer to, would you guess? Yeah, the presence of an argillic horizon. Okay, how about this one? Zaire as a formative element.
Dry.
Well, even more specifically.
Dry.
More specific than dry. Keep going. Remember, soil moisture regimes, we talk about xeric. Yeah, so that would be a xeric moisture regime. How about cry? C-R-Y. A cryic temperature regime, okay? So these are the kinds of things that get strung together to make the taxonomic classes. And as I said, most of these you probably are going to recognize from stuff we've already talked about. Now, remember we have several levels of the system, starting with soil order, right? Then what's the next level down from that? Suborder, then great group, and then subgroup. And I want to talk about those for just a minute. So what we tend to want to do is think about this as a hierarchical system. So I'm going to write out a taxonomic name, and this will be a subgroup classification. I'll write it up here. Typic. How about this? Fragiudal. Okay, that is a subgroup classification of a soil that we might find one of those around here, but probably more of a Midwestern kind of soil. What this subgroup classification has is several formative elements that are combined to give us this taxonomic name. Now let's dissect this a little bit. Can anybody tell me what soil order that is? Let's start at the highest level of the system. Okay, it's an alpha sol, and how do you know that? Okay, this ending right here, alph, indicates soil order. And here's the thing with determining the formative element that is referring to the orders. Somebody give me a name of soil order, any soil order.
Mollisol.
Okay, mollisol. You write that out. You notice they all end with I-S-O-L or O-S-O-L. What you want to do is get rid of that, the I-S-O-L or O-S-O-L. Start there, go to the first vowel, and that is your formative element. So for a mollisol, it would be O-L-L. Okay? How about for oxisol? What would the formative element be for an oxisol? It's just ox, right? Get rid of the I-S-O-L, and all you're left with is O-X, okay? So that's how that works. What I wrote here on the board, typic fragiudalf, what is the suborder? Okay, the suborder is going to be this entire thing here. So the suborder would be a udalf. Get rid of that. Notice U-D-A-L-F. Now, what we're seeing is a formative element on there. Do you recognize that? U-D? What does that refer to?
Udic
soil moisture regime. So it's an alphasol, udic soil moisture regime. What would the great group of this particular soil be? Fragiudalf. So it's this whole thing here. And you notice the fragi formative element probably refers to what? Yeah, soil's got a fragipan. Now, one note here. All of these order, suborder, great group names are proper nouns, and they should be capitalized, okay? Everyone's got a pet peeve. One of mine is when people don't capitalize soil names. So if you don't capitalize them, I'm probably not going to capitalize your name either, all right? What would be the subgroup classification of this soil? The whole thing, typic fragiudalf. Now, you notice we get over here, you got this word typic, which is a little bit different, and I'll talk more about this, but basically, this just means typical. You'll see that a lot in suborders, but we'll come back to that in a little bit. Subgroup. Sorry. Glad somebody's paying attention. Subgroup. So I think what you can start to see how these formative elements get put together. And it's not in a random fashion. Obviously, you have to go through the keys to come up with these. But I think you're going to find that you can look at most any classification term, at least at the subgroup level. And based on what you see there, you've got a pretty good idea of some of the properties that soil has. Let's kind of move on to the next thing and talk a little bit more about these subgroups. And Let's see, here we go. The thing about subgroups is, now they are a subdivision of the great group. So what it's doing, one of those bad spelling days. They're subdivisions, so when you think of these names, you know, you start with the order, that's the most general term there for classification, and as you go down here to the subgroup, you're getting more and more specific. So the subgroups are simply used to further define the great groups, which would be that part of the taxonomic name. And oftentimes for the subgroup, it's going to be indicated, as I gave you in this example, you'll see this word typic. And what that means is that in this case, we've got all of these fragile udelfs, okay? And for this particular soil, this is the typical or kind of the central concept of those soils. There's nothing unusual about it beyond the fragile udelf thing. It's kind of the textbook example of a fragile udelf, okay? So you will see this a lot in there where it's as the placeholder for the subgroup. And all that means is that it's kind of the, as I said, central concept or typical variety. Now, you may find something like this, write it out. How about an Andic, make it local. Andic RG Zerol. Now, notice we've got that term Andic in there. What do you suppose that refers to? Volcanic ash or Andic soil properties. So the idea here for this Andic RG Zerol, this soil is not a typical RG Zerol or the central concept, and what makes it different is it's got some volcanic, some properties that we associate with andisols, okay? And so that's actually what we might call an intergrade. In other words, this RG Zerol is kind of tending towards another taxonomic grouping. So this, you know, has, let's just say, has properties of an andisol. Now, it has some properties of an andisol, not enough to make it an andisol, but just some influence. Does that make sense? Well, and you'll see a lot of other examples. For example, how about this one? How about a lithic RG Zerol? It's not typical of RG Zerols because of what? Well, this does mean rock, but in this case, it means that it has a lithic contact. You might remember that from the list of diagnostic horizon features. All that means is it has an R horizon or hard bedrock relatively close to the surface. Whereas a typic RG Zerol, you're not going to have that. And there you'll see other examples, but oftentimes, as I said, at the subgroup level, you'll see this term typic referring to the central concept. And if it's not the central concept, then you'll have these other formative elements that kind of indicate what's unusual about it. Why does it not fall within the central concept of that grouping? Does that make sense? Okay, well I'm gonna give you a little test here. See how well you're digesting this. And what I'm gonna do is write 5 taxonomic names on the board here, and then I want you to arrange them. Let me write them up here first. And these, I'm not making these up. These are actually out of soil taxonomy. Okay, so the first one, Eudic RG Ustal, typic RG Ustal, aqua, type C, Riddick, RG Ustal, Opwick, RG Ustal, and last, Tippic, RG Aqual. Okay, now what I want you to do is, using numbers 1 through 5, assign a number to each of those indicating the relative wetness or driest. So let's say number 1 is equal to the wettest, 5 would be the driest. And here's where you need to keep in mind that this is a hierarchical system. In other words, you know, you've got the suborder, or the order here, they're all mollisols, right? But then when we get into the suborder level, they're split out on the basis of some property or feature. And then again, at the great group level, they're going to be split out. And then those great groups are further split out at the subgroup level. So give you a second to write those down, and then let's see if we can go through there and figure out the relative wetness, dryness of them all. So let's start with number 1, or the wettest. Of those soils listed there, which one would be the wettest?
The bottom one.
Okay, I hear the bottom one, the Tippic RG Aqual. Anybody else want to weigh in with a different?
I thought Opwick, but.
Well, yeah, you see this name, but Opwick RG Ustal. But here's the thing, the hierarchical nature. They're all mollisols, right? So then we take the mollisols and then we break them out according, in many cases, to moisture regime. What's the moisture regime of this one? Ustic. That one? Ustic, that one? Ustic, that one? Aqwick. So that's going to be the wettest soil, right? So this will be number 1 here. Okay, now, let's keep going. What would be the next moistest after the Tippic RG Aqual? Okay, yeah, this one right here, the Aqwick RG Ustal. And the thing is, this word aquic may kind of throw you, but the information that's being conveyed is that the moisture regime here is what? Ustic. However, it's not the typical variety or the central concept because it's a little bit wetter. And so it's tending towards probably being an aqual or having an aquic soil moisture regime. What would be the next one on the list, then? Number 3? Tippic. Okay, I hear some votes for Utic. I like that one. Because the Tippic RG Ustal means that it's a very typical soil mollisol with an ustic soil moisture regime and an argillic horizon, right? So it's the central concept. How about this one up here, Utic RG Ustal? Well, it's still a mollisol with an ustic moisture regime and an argillic horizon, but what does Utic mean? It's not a typical RG Ustal. It's tending towards being a little bit wetter or having a Utic soil moisture regime. All right. What would be next on the list?
Tippic.
The Tippic. Okay. And then number 5, the Riddick. Does that make sense to everybody? Because this is, make sure you understand this, because this is kind of how the system is set up, and in terms of this hierarchical thing, you really need to start on the right-hand side of the taxonomic name and kind of work. Remember, this is general, and then getting more specific as you move to the left. And remember that everything as you move to the left is just a subdivision of what you've already, the taxonomic name that you've already got there. All right, well, if you understand this, you're well on your way. Okay, now I need to talk about one other thing, because To this point, we're all we've done here is talk about the subgroup classification, right? And what we, in terms of taxonomy, what was the next level down below a subgroup?
Families.
So I want to say a little bit about family classification, and if you guys started on this assignment, you've obviously ran into the family classification. A couple of general things. What we call these family classification or family groupings. And these are nothing more, let's write this up here. The families are simply further classifications of the subgroups. So we're breaking the subgroups down a little bit more, and to a large extent, the family classification is based on properties and characteristics that are relevant for management. So based on characteristics, properties that are very relevant to management. And you might add something else here. These are based on characteristics, properties relative to management that have not come out at higher levels of the system. That is subgroups, great groups, suborders, and orders, okay? What are some properties that are relative to are very relevant to management? Okay, I'll write that down in a second, but in Soil 205, whenever you ask, you know, what's a property
texture.
That influences, you got it, texture. So we have something known as particle size or texture, very relevant to management. Particle size, which includes rocks and texture would be one. And let me say this, the properties that are used at the family level, it's going to vary a little bit from one taxonomic grouping to the next, but in general, you're going to see something about particle size or texture, except in the case of organic soils, because then it's not very relevant. The other things on here, mineralogy. What do you have a dominant mineral that is present in this soil? And in some soils you do, like vertisols, what would you guess the dominant mineral is?
Clay.
Yeah, what kind of clay?
Smectite,
yeah, that would be the dominant mineral. So that may be something that comes out at the family level. The other thing that comes out at the family level typically is something that we call a cation exchange class. And this is simply an indication of the, actually let's call an activity class. And we'll see examples of these later, but I don't want you to worry too much about this right now. But just be aware that this is something. If you see something that says super active, that means that it's got a very high cation exchange capacity, okay? The last thing I'll put on here is STR or soil temperature regime. And I'm going to put an asterisk by it because in some cases the soil temperature regime is going to come out at a higher level of the system. Like in a gelosol, it essentially comes out at the order level, right? Other soils, it may come out at the suborder level. It varies, but if it does not come out somewhere up in here, then it's always going to be given at the family level of classification. Okay, now here's the part that gets a little bit trickier, and this has to do with the handout that I gave you that says family level classification, soil taxonomy. So you might want to dig that out here. Here's the thing. If we want to include information about the texture or particle size distribution of a soil, I mean, I think everybody agrees that's important, right? But how are we going to do that for a soil that maybe goes down to a meter and a half depth and maybe has different textures? For example, it could have a BT horizon, or we might see a clay increase. So how do we want to express the texture or particle size distribution of a soil? And for that matter, same thing with mineralogy. It may vary with depth. Same with cation exchange activity class. Well, what we do, and this is, you know, just simply the way it's done, for better or for worse, is we identify something known as a control section in the soil. And in most cases, if you look on your handout, the first sentence up here, it says, classification of soils at the family level requires determination of a control section. This control section consists of one of the following. And there's three possibilities there. If there's the first one, letter A, if there's no argillic, candic, natric, or root limiting layer, the control section is simply 25 centimeters down to a meter. Pretty straightforward. Part B there, it says if there is an argillic, candic, or natric horizon, in other words, a BT horizon, zone, subsurface zone of clay accumulation, the control section's the upper 50 centimeters of that BT horizon, or the entire horizon if it's less than 50 centimeters thick. And anybody know why we would use the BT horizon or the argillic horizon for a particle size control section? What would the reason for that be? Well, think about the hydrological properties of a soil profile. Which is going to be the most limiting layer in terms of water movement? Yeah, it's going to be the one probably with the most clay or the zone of clay accumulation. So hydraulically, it would be the most limiting layer in most cases. It's probably going to be the one that controls a lot of other characteristics of that soil, like rooting patterns and things like that. All right, and then part C on here, if you have a root limiting layer within 36 centimeters of the soil surface, so this would be a pretty shallow soil, right? 36 centimeters, maybe about like that. You've got, think of a bedrock contact. The control section is simply going to be everything from the surface down to that root limiting layer, because you just don't have much soil there, so you use all that's present. And if the top of the limiting layer is deeper than 36, then you use the 25 centimeter depth down to that limiting layer. So I know that's a little bit much to keep track of. Don't worry too much about it, because we're going to see examples of these as we go through the soil orders, and I think it'll start to make a little bit more sense. But the as I said, the family classification, the idea is to provide information about properties of the soil that are going to really have a strong management influence. Are there questions about that? Well, okay, then the last thing we got to do, we're going to come back to this particle size business. The bottom half of your handout looks like a textural triangle there, but what's different about it? Well, you don't see things like clay loam and silty clay loam and loamy sand. What you see instead are these terms clayey, fine loamy, coarse loamy, fine silty. So what you do when we talk about the particle size classes that we use at the family level, we're not using textural classes per se, or the way we learned them. What you're doing is using this textural triangle and identifying whatever that control section may be, either the top 50 centimeters of the argillic horizon or the 0 to 36 centimeter depth, whatever the case may be. And what you're going to do is get the average texture of that control section and then figure out where it plots on this triangle. So if it's one that's got a lot of clay, you're probably up here in the clayey particle size family. If you're down in the sandy end, you might be way over in the corner, it might be a sandy particle size family. Okay? So you'll notice that the names are just a little bit different, but this is what it refers to. The last part of it, and that's the last statement on here. If the control section has more than 35% rock fragments, that's going to have a really significant effect on management, right? And so if there are more than 35% rock fragments, and you'd estimate this using those charts that you guys got back earlier in the semester, you know, where you're looking at the cover, it's greater than 35%, then you want to have that identified somehow in the classification. And we use this term skeletal. And you can see there are three classes, sandy skeletal, loamy skeletal, and clayey skeletal. So if you see that term skeletal in the family name, you know that that's a rocky soil, all right? Greater than 35% rock fragments. Okay. Any questions on this? Does it make sense? Clear? Mateo.
In the definition of the soil, the epibedum never come up.
That's not true. What's the soil order?
Mollisol.
And mollisols are characterized by having a mollic epipedon. Okay? So the thing that makes this, I think, difficult for a lot of people is that when you're dealing with the mollisol order, the things that are used for classification purposes, the properties and features, are going to be very different than what you use when you're classifying gelisols. So you don't use the same criteria. As I said, in mollisols, as it turns out, the suborders are generally based on a soil moisture regime. Okay? Gelisols, not so much, because you know, their overriding factor there is they're cold. So anyway, don't worry too much about that. That's the nice thing about having keys, is that you decide a soil is a mollisol, you just go down through the keys, and it tells you how it's going to fall out. All right, now, believe it or not, this is all the information that you guys need to understand soil classification, at least according to soil taxonomy. And as I mentioned earlier, there's really going to be no new information presented in this class. It's just going to be taking what we've had here and seeing how it applies to the different soil orders. But I think you'll be delighted by how much, simply by understanding the way the system is set up and what some of these formative elements refer to. I think you'll be surprised at how much you know about soils that, if you look at their classification, and these would be soils that you have maybe never seen before in your life. Now, I'm going to give you an example here. I'm going to write out the entire family level classification for a soil. So loamy skeletal, mixed, superactive. Mesic, aquic, argyudol. It's hard to read. Okay, I don't think any of you have ever seen one of these soils. If you have, you didn't know it at the time. But just based on the classification, if you can read it there, loamy skeletal, mixed, superactive, mesic, aquic, argyudol. What can you tell me about this soil? Knowing what you know right now. Okay, somebody say back
there?
Okay, it's rocky. It's got greater than 35% rock fragments in it. Okay?
Has a high cation capacity.
Okay, it's superactive, meaning it has a high cation exchange capacity. What else?
It has a mesic temperature regime.
So that tells us that the mean annual soil temperature is what? Anybody remember? 8 to 15 degrees C. All right, keep going.
It's got a mixed mineralogy.
Okay, mixed, this is the mineralogy thing right there. Mixed just means that there is no single mineral that dominates. It's kind of a mix of all these things. And that's, mixed isn't that exciting, but if it was something else like siliceous or smectitic or something else, that might be a little more exciting. So that's just mixed mineralogy. Okay, what else?
So wet end and normal?
Well, maybe we ought to talk about what's normal.
Well, it's wetter than typical.
But typical what? Well, let's back up. Let's start over here.
Doesn't that just mean it has like awkward conditions for some portion of the year?
Yeah, it means that it's not a what we would consider a very well-drained soil. It might be, it's not a poorly drained soil, but it's somewhere in between. Let's back up. Let's start with look at the aquic RGU doll. Okay, what can you get out of that?
It's a mollusol.
It's a mollusol, meaning that, what? Let's not use taxonomic terms. That's a taxonomic term. This is for lay people. Now come on. What does that mean if it's a mollusol?
It's a grassland.
Okay, it's a grassland soil, most likely formed under grassland vegetation. So kind of a grassland, it's called a grassland soil. What else could you say about it in terms of characteristics that you could tell a layperson?
High biomass productivity.
Okay, it's got a thick, dark surface horizon in it, okay. All right, what else can you tell somebody about this soil? Well, let's work down from the order level. Okay, now what?
Now it has a unique soil moisture.
Okay, you can't use that term to lay person. What does that mean? What can you tell them?
Seems lots of precipitation.
Okay, it has precipitation that's relatively well distributed throughout the year, and there is a very limited period of time where there's a soil moisture deficit. Okay, I don't want to write all that out, but I'll put, humid climate, limited water deficit. All right, RG, what can you tell somebody about that? Not lots of clay, just a subsurface zone of clay accumulation. You can have a sandy loam that's still an argillic horizon. So it has subsoil clay accumulation. And what's the significance of that? Why do we even care if it's got an argillic horizon or not? What does the fact that there has been a subsoil accumulation of clay indicate about this soil?
Does it indicate age?
Not necessarily old, but we got to be careful here because I think about an oxisol as being old. But in order to develop an argillic horizon, you need to have a fairly stable landscape position, right? So that you and it needs to be the soil forming processes proceeded to the point where you've had this clay accumulate, so you've got 1.2 times as much. So that's kind of the idea, is this argillic horizons tend to be in stable landscape positions, okay? If you get up on a really steep slope, chances are you're not going to find an argillic horizon in it. All right, what else? Let's deal with this aquic part of it now. What would you tell somebody about that? At least at certain times during the year, it's going to be a wet soil, all right? So, you have a water table that's going to be close to the surface, at least not for a significant period of time, but at least at some point during the season. Yeah.
Could it also mean it's in a valley, maybe, up with that water drainage?
It could, but I wouldn't infer too much more than what we've said here. You just know that there's some drainage issues. Not serious, but like somebody said, it's a little wetter than what you might typically expect of what the environment we're describing here. Anything else? Well, I can't think of anything else, but I guess what I'll submit is that is a lot of information to get out of that name, right? And you guys know enough about how all this goes together that these are the types or the type of information that you're going to be able to infer just by knowing, in this case, the family level classification of a soil. Now, I know we got a lot of plant people in here, and I love doing this. And I'm going to write the equivalent level of classification for a plant. Triantha, glutinosa, and then we put MICHX in parentheses, and then Baker after that. This is a plant, you find it in the Pacific Northwest. What can you tell me about that plant? Yeah, he reclassified it. He's just trying to get his name on it, I guess. That's not clear to me how all that works. But yeah, some guy named Baker reclassified the plant. What else?
It's not written in English.
Well, this isn't either. Aquic RGE Udall.
It probably has like three lobes on the leaves.
Three lobes, triantha?
Well, there's tridenta.
So three is something, anthas. So there are three anthas in this plant. What's this right here, the MICHX? What do you guys know what that's called?
That's the original author.
Yeah, the author citation, Michaud was the one who, I guess, first described it. And then Baker decided he was wrong in the way that he classified it. So, all right, what else? Yeah, let's write. It's got three of something on it, okay? What does glutinosa mean?
It fixes a lot of sugar.
What I remember from plant taxonomy, and it's not very much, but doesn't that mean that it's got sticky hairs on the surface or something like that? On the stem? I think that it does.
You didn't write down the family or anything, though.
I'm giving you a very specific classification, just like I gave
you. There's family and order and genus.
Isn't that smart to do it that way?
Well, you could put family before triantha.
Anything else from this? Triantha glutinosa. Okay, I think I made my point. And
we're all idiots.
No, this is the characteristic of soil taxonomy. It was designed to be a technical system, and one of the goals is to impart as much information as possible from the classification. And now that you guys know how the whole thing works, orders, suborders, great groups, and so on down the line, and what some of these diagnostic horizons and features are, the moisture, temperature regimes, you are able to look at a name like this and you can come up with a lot of information about the properties of that soil, the environment where it exists, and in some cases even more things than that. Whereas if you compare the equivalent level of classification for plants and animals, you're left with something like this that in many cases doesn't tell you a whole lot. And that's, you know, I think in hindsight, the people who came up with the taxonomic system for plants and animals, if they could do it again, it probably would be a much different system than what is used today. It probably would be genetically based. You have to go in the lab and do stuff. But anyway, it's a big difference between the two systems, but this is what allows you to use soil taxonomy. And most of you are not going to spend your professional career classifying soils, but I will bet at least one time or another, you're going to be looking at a taxonomic name for soils that exist someplace, and this is the kind of information you'll be able to pull out from it. And I think that's pretty useful. Okay, the last thing I want to mention then is the homework assignment. And I passed this out, well, I left it here on the table. And this goes back to the field trip that we had right before spring break. We were down at the Wauwai County Park, and we looked at that great exposure of the slack water, Missoula flood deposits. And what I want you to do, we talked about this a little while we were there, is to come up with an interpretive sign that the park might consider putting there at the base of it, explaining what people are looking at. And what I wrote on here is that, remember, this is the sign is developed, you're going to develop it for the general public. So you can't be using terms like loamy skeletal mix, superactive, or aquic, argy, udol, or anything like that. Just put it in common terms that people can understand, and do what you can to make it interesting. You know, somebody walks by and they start to read this, don't let them get to three words and go, oh, you gotta be kidding me, and walk on. And, hey, that's cool, I wanna know more about it. So there's really, other than that, there's really no guidelines for this, and I'm not going to be grading it as the way some of these other assignments are graded. I just want you to think about how you might approach this type of a project. And so let's say, they're due, come in, a week from today. So here's your opportunity to be creative, all right? So for next time, what we're gonna do is start on the soil orders, and we're gonna be going through the soil orders in the order in which they key out in soil taxonomy. So if you look on the website, the first grouping that's there, the class schedule will be gelisols. So we're gonna start with those. The homework assignment that's due today, as I said, if there's anything that you might want to go back and change.
Due Thursday.
Yeah, but originally due today. Oh, but okay. If there's anything you want to change, go hold on to it and just get it to me by Thursday, all right?